Welcome to Lexar at Lunch. My name is Reed Lessing. Happy to have you with me as we go through our text, Isaiah 58, verses 3 through 9a. We find ourselves in the third part of the book of Isaiah, which is normally understood to be chapters 56 to 66. It's important that we understand that these 11 chapters are in a chiastic arrangement. Most commentaries recognize this, so I would alert you to pick up a commentary to see the greater details. The main point, though, is that in the middle of this chiasm in chapters 56 to 66 is what is sometimes called the fifth servant song, chapter 61, 1 to 3. This is very important to note, not only structurally and theologically, but specifically homiletically. As you go about preaching on this text, we have all kinds of problems here in our text in terms of outward religion without any real change of action in people's lives. The solution, though, to the problem is going to be this anointed servant of Yahweh, who in 61:1-3 is the one who finally takes care of the needy, the afflicted, the poor, the hungry, the naked, the destitute. That are the people who are being disenfranchised in our text. We really can't preach this text in any kind of a law gospel integrity and point people to Christ without recognizing that Isaiah has structured this part of his book to point us to the solution, and that would be fulfilled as Jesus takes his appointed time in reading the scroll from the prophet Isaiah in chapter 61, 1 to 2a, and that really then is what Luke narrates in Luke chapter 4. So with those initial structural, theological, Christological, homiletical ideas in mind, let's look at this text. It's a very challenging text, not only for the Christian, but also for the exegete. So we begin in 58, verse 3, where we have a quote from the people. A llama is the first word there. Why? It's going to do double duty here. Why do we fast? Tzom nu from the Hebrew word tzum, which means fast, and you v'lo ra'ita. This is a prayer. This is a lament by the people to God. Why do we fast and you don't see? Which, in a sense, gets us right to the heart of the problem. The people are doing outward acts to be seen by God, assuming then that God will see this and reward them for their outward acts of piety. This is exactly what HaSatan, the Satan, the accuser, points out in regards to Job in Job chapter 1. He simply tells Yahweh that Job is doing all of this pious action so he can be seen by Yahweh and he can be rewarded by Yahweh. So this is probably a very helpful text, especially in Job 1 verse 9, where the accuser accuses Job of doing, quote, does Job worship God kinam, for nothing? Man, that's actually the major point of the book of Job. Do we fast for nothing? Will we go to worship, give our offerings, visit the aged in the nursing home? Do we do that for nothing, or are we looking for some kind of a reward some kind of a blessing from God for our sanctified life. And that brings us back to our text. Second part of 58, verse 3, why do we afflict ourselves and you do not know? Again, the lament of the people toward Yahweh. So this PL verb, anah, plus nefesh, is indicative of fasting. Primarily, this is the same verb and noun that's used in Leviticus 16:29, which comes in the context of the fast commanded on Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, which is the only fast actually commanded in the Old Testament. And that's an important idea. Because if this is the Sitzim Laban, then, is the Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, the Day of Atonement is a day of forgiveness and restoration. And in like manner, as people fast in the Day of Atonement and they're restored, they're forgiven, they're set free, they're empowered then to do that for others in the community. And that's exactly what is not happening in our text. Well, we go on. Behold, in the day of your fasting, so this is Yahweh's response, or the prophet's response, or probably not either or, but both and. Behold, in the day of your fasting, you find Tim Tzu Kippur. Pets, you find kapatz is your desire, your delight. So on the day of your fasting, you do whatever you want. Then he goes on to say that all of your workers, it's kind of an odd Hebrew word here, all of your workers, what do? You exploit. You nagash is that last word in the verse. Now, normally, nagash, this first nun, has the nun assimilate here in this call imperfect. So, glory be an unassimilated nun. You don't see that very often. This is the same word used, nagash, in Exodus 3, verse 7, to describe how Egyptians treated Israelites. It's a major insight into what's going on here. It's also how people would treat cattle and livestock. So the privileged people in the community in Isaiah 58 are treating the underprivileged people, their workers, as animals. But all the while they're saying, we're fasting. We're humbling ourselves, and this is exactly the prophetic critique that's going on. So, verse 4, behold then, for contention is what's going on here, is your fast, and for a fist. You're fasting, O people of God, and there's contention going on. There's fists. And then we have this hifil and fim construct from nakah, ule ha kot, and to strike by means of a fist. Rashad there is probably functioning as an adjective, by means of an evil fist. So there's fist fights breaking out by, again, the privileged who are treating the underprivileged like animals. And we'll see that as we go along with Isaiah's repeated use of motah, which is the English word then for yoke. You only put a yoke on an animal. Well, moving on there. Lo tatsumu kayom, and you will not fast like the day, literally, to make known ba marom on high your voice. So you can't be treating people like animals, instrumentalizing people, using them as means to an end, and still expect your voice to be heard on high. Ba-Marom, that's exactly where Yahweh is. You can go back to chapter 57:15, which is just obviously above in BHS on the same page, 57:15, and it says, this is where Yahweh dwells. Because thus says the high and lofty one who dwells in eternity. His name is holy. Marom and Kadosh I dwell. So your prayers are not going to enter the heavenly temple and be heard by Yahweh with this kind of fasting going on. Verse 5, which has several hey interrogatives here. I count three of them. Is like this, Yahya, will be a tzom, a fast, Yahweh speaking through the prophet, that I have chosen it. So is this the kind of fast that I choose? A fast, anot, there would be that same PL triliteral root, ayin nun he, PL infinitive construct here. This is what the people were to do on the Day of Atonement, right? To afflict themselves, humble themselves. Again, that's Leviticus 16:29. But they're doing this to Adam Nafsho, to a person his life. So this is not the kind of fast where you afflict other people. And then he goes on with another hey interrogative, with this call infinitive construct from Lamed Kaf Pei, which means to bow. So to bow like a reed, on moan, Rosho, to bow his head like a reed. In other words, to humble him, debase him, and to lie. This is from Yatziach, first nun. There, that is an assimilated nun, Hifil, from Nun Tzade Ayin, and to lie down upon, forced to lie down this person upon sackcloth and ash. So there's a major dichotomy going on. Between what is professed in worship and what's going on outside of worship. Is this what Yahweh actually wants? And the prophetic critique is not even close. Well, he goes on and asks the question, is that what you call a fast? Ha lazeh, again a hey interrogative, preformed lamed and then zeh, this. Is this you call a fast and a day, ratzon le Yahweh, to please Yahweh? And we'd want to pause here to make sure that we understand that it's not an either or, either fast or treat people with kindness and love and forgiveness. It's both and. Yahweh wants the externals, because the external fasting is to lead to assisting people in the community. Well, verse 6 then goes on. Is not, hello always implies a positive answer. Is this the fast that I will choose for it? And the answer is yes. So now we're getting into what Yahweh prefers the community do on the Day of Atonement in their fast. And here's a appeal infinitive construct to open, and then the next word, ha-tzavot. So ha-tzavot rasha. So to loose, to open the chains of evil. and to open up to free chords of motah. There's that word yoke. So the day is to be a day of liberation for people, to loosen the people from slavery, perhaps indentured slavery. One scholar talks about what was going on in the ancient Near East in terms of this type of scenario. This is Joseph Blenkinsop in his commentary on Isaiah 56-66. I quote, "In the context of this place and time, we may find here a reference to indentured service resulting from insolvency. The conditions to which the relevant biblical texts refer can easily be imagined. A succession of bad harvests, creating an immediate crisis for a subsistence agrarian economy. The individual small farmer forced to borrow at exorbitant rates. In Mesopotamia," Blenkinsop notes, "the interest rate sometimes was 75% interest. There's no comparable data available for Syria-Palestine, but the assumption is that in some cases this was the interest needed by the movers and shakers and foisted upon the person who is very much at the bottom of the socioeconomic scale. To continue quoting from Blenkinsop, to pay for seed for the next harvest, indentured service of members of the household as a result of failing to amortize the debt, loss of the plot of land on which survival depended, the breakup of the household whose members then go to swell the population of causal laborers, the homeless, casual laborers, I'm sorry, the homeless, and the down and outs." So Blenkinsop believes this is what's going on here in terms of the high and mighty crushing the poor and destitute and treating them again like animals. It goes on in verse 6, another appeal and fame construct. "And to send bruised ones," this is a call passive participle from Ratzatz, which actually occurs in the first servant song in Isaiah chapter 42. The servant is not to crush these people further, but to give them freedom. And everyone and every yoke, te na te ku, you will break. So stop again treating people like animals. Break the yoke, every yoke. And verse 7 then continues with Yahweh's description of what a true fast is going to look like. Is not to break for a hungry one, lach mecha, and for his bread, for your bread. So use your bread to feed the hungry. And the afflicted one, who would be probably homeless and a sojourner, tavia by it, you will bring hifilavbo a house. You'll give this person a pillow and a bed and a blanket, and you will see ki tira, and when you see their nakedness, you will cover it, and your flesh, you will not hide yourself from. Here we'd want to pause a little bit. Most commentators understand your flesh to be someone within your own family. So apparently these people were not only instrumentalizing community down and out workers, they were doing that to their own family members. Tit alam, that would be a hithpael from alam, which means to hide yourself. So apparently within the community, I see someone in my immediate family, my own flesh, and I hide myself from helping them. And Yahweh says, don't do it. Then, verse 8, O Rekah, your light, Yeh Bakah, that's a Niphal, right? Diagnostic markers there would be a Dagesh 14, the Beth, the comments under the first consonant in the triliteral root. Isaiah only uses this particular verb two times to describe the gushing water in 35:6 and hatching eggs in 59:5. Then your light will break forth, gush forth like the dawn, and your healing quickly will sprout forth. And your righteousness will walk lifaneka before you, and the glory of Yahweh will be your rear guard. Certainly an Exodus motif here in terms of Yahweh being the people's rear guard. He will go before you in righteousness, and then the glory of Yahweh will be your rear guard. It will cover your back. Then you will call, verse 9, V'Yahweh Yeh Aneh. And there's our root here that we've seen several times, Ayin Nun Hey. It's also under the lexicon, Ana 2, to answer. We've been looking at Ana 1, to afflict. But then you will call in Yahweh and answer. You will cry out, appeal of Shiva, and he will say, Hanani. Hanani. Yahweh will say Hanani, which is so ironic because only the servant says to the master, Hanani. This is what Isaiah says in 6 verse 8. Here I am, Hanani, Shalakani. But Yahweh, you see, takes the form of a servant and becomes disposable and accessible to the community. He says, here I am. In fact, in chapter 65, verse 1, second part of 65:1, and I say, Hineni, Hineni, here I am, here I am. So the only way the community is going to finally be restored from treating others like animals is for this servant, this anointed a person in 61:1-3, because he's finally the one who can do this, to heal the brokenhearted, to say to captives, Doror, freedom, jubilee, the opening of the eyes to the blind, to proclaim the year of Yahweh's favor, etc. So Christologically and really contextually, the answer to the social and economic oppression going on here is to look to the center of this text, and that finally is Christ our Lord, who does what we are unable to do, and himself says, here I am. And I would think that this Hineni, the last a word, at least in the pericope, is then our key that God wants to be our servant. And we could certainly go to the fourth servant song, where the servant himself was treated like an animal, right? Like a sheep before her shears is silent, so he did not open his mouth. So the servant has solidarity with people being treated like animals. He himself was treated like one, 53:7, and yet overcame it creates in us the desire then to live this kind of life, a life of humility and care for people in our communities and in our lives. Thank you so much for joining us at Lectionary at Lunch. I'm Reed Lessing, and I'm signing off.